Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in to another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of Hockey Royalty.com. Messed that one up there, but we're gonna have a lot to talk about today. Did something go on in Kingsland? I think there was a trade or something. We'll get into it. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Let's go. Well, Joe, it's just you and I, you know, our the third prong to the triumphant is in a layover right now. He had a Twitter Spaces earlier letting fans come on there and gave his opinion. So I think he might be posting that tomorrow on the podcast. If you want to listen to that, he's going to try to get me the audio there. But Joe and I got some opinions as well. We're going to be going back and forth. Obviously, we talked a little bit about what the possibility would mean a couple episodes ago, you know, pros and cons and everything like that. Got pretty heated. I'm sure we're going to have some debate here tonight. But before we dive in, Joe, how are you doing, my man?
I'm all right. And yeah, the timing of it all was rough. Had to pick the kids up. So I tried to catch at least a little bit of the listening on Russ's Twitter Spaces for a little bit there on the way to get the boys after work. It's been a pretty kind of crazy few days, you could say, as kind of a fan. I love this stuff. I think a lot of people get annoyed with it, which I totally understand. I love it. I love the rumors. I love the talks. I love the speculation. I don't know why. I can't explain why I love it, but I love it. And you never know who to believe or what's what. Nobody knows anything. And then you got everybody's tweeting out this and that, but it's just, to me, it's fun. Like at the end of the day, it's not, we're not there. We're not, like at the end of the day, we're fans, and we obviously do this as kind of, you know, analysts, if you will, on the pod, but it's fun. Like, I think it should be fun. I understand why it can be annoying for some, but I love it. So the more chaos, the better for me, and right before the draft. So a lot of fun.
I mean, I'm just glad it wasn't a 2-year saga like the Chychrun thing. It was over pretty quickly. But let's get into the chat here. Tapong comes in with just waving hello there. CJ coming in. What a day. Let's talk some hockey. Holden 92. This should be a really good episode. Yes, it will be. Tom Cruise, I'm not really a fan of this trade. Well, we'll get into that. Maybe I won't be either. Can't chat, but go Kings go from Carter Scores. Nick Froman comes in with a hey fellas, go Kings go. So let's get into it first. Trade came in a couple days ago. Sean Durzi going to Arizona for a second. That second was used in this upcoming trade. Overall, you know, it's obviously those two are going to mail a little bit. We're going to focus more on the PLD. But do you think they got fair value for Sean Durzi?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I think if we all were talking like there's a log jam on the right side. And I don't think you were going to – Durzi wasn't ever going to be a centerpiece to a deal. I think it was just – I think they got fair value. I don't think that the – second round pick. I think that's a perfectly fair value for what Sean Durzi brings. I loved him. I loved his game, but understand that there's a logjam. You know, we got Clark and Spence banging down the door. So it's just a tough spot to fill, you know, for him to find a role. And despite I was a fan of his game, I loved the emotion he brought to the game. but understood it, you know, and obviously that was a bit of a precursor. You knew something was coming after that. It's just a matter of what and when. But the Kings did need to A, shed a roster spot, and B, a little bit of cap space. So that's what happened there. But yes, fair value.
Yeah, I like this trade. I think that Spence has nothing more to prove in the AHL.
Yep.
You know, I'm, you know, Clark mania over here. So, and he's got plenty of emotion. So we're not losing emotion. We probably gained more emotion with how Clark plays there and his sellies. But, you know, you look at, we acquired him in that trade. You know, he was a second round pick. We got a second round pick for him. You know, and that's multiple years after you're drafted, right? So you usually see when a player is drafted, his shine is lost, right? You're not getting the fifth overall pick for Alex Turcotte right now. So, like, your shine gets lost a little bit with Durzi. He was kind of an afterthought in the AHL in this trade, right? Carl Grundstrom gets brought up first. Durzi's kind of the afterthought of this deal, and everybody's like, okay, well, was that kind of a throw-in? And then he made a name for himself on the team. Second most productive offensive defenseman. Really showing he can play some solid minutes on the right and left side. And I think it's the perfect landing spot for him. I think that he could be he's their highest paid defenseman. He's probably going to be their number one right shot D on that side, unless they bring somebody in or there's a prospect that I'm not aware of. So they're going to really give him an opportunity to shine and earn some major money where he wasn't going to get that opportunity on the Kings. So I think it works well for Sean Durzi. It works well for the Kings. You know, I've always been a fan of the prospects earning their way onto a roster, but also be given a chance to earn that. And Clark is now given a chance to earn his station as the future for the Los Angeles Kings as right D1, and this is where his journey really begins in that. So with that said, let's talk to one of the most polarizing trades that I've seen in a while. I think the speculation of the Chychrun trade was pretty similar. There was a lot of people that hated the guy. There was a lot of people that loved the idea. I mean, just looking at the chat already, Angel coming in, I think this could be turned out to be one of the dumbest trades we've ever traded, our entire third line for one player. So, you know, it just – and then you have people all day. I mean, all yesterday for 8 straight hours, I was combating people that said I didn't know what I was talking about. So it was just this vigor of the Kings fan base. You got to love it. But hey, we're getting Pierre-Luc Dubois, former third overall pick. He went to Columbus and then got traded to Winnipeg, stayed in Winnipeg there. And then we trade him for Iafallo, Vilardi, Kupari, and then the second that we got for Durzi. So if you want to put Durzi as that's how we got him, essentially 4 starters for one player. I don't want to start the show on a negative foot, so I'm gonna let you be positive first, Joe. Obviously you were a fan of Pierre-Luc Dubois, you're a fan of this trade. What is your biggest reason for liking this trade in your opinion?
So I think there's a couple things to break out here, and you stop me at any point. And and so there's the player, there's the trade, and there's the contract, is how I've kind of like trying to look at this. So we'll start with the player. Yes, as you know, I love the player. He's been one of my favorite players really since he was drafted. I think when we first started doing Making It Rain, Randon, I think you would ask me my style of player, and it's hard not to Andre Kopitar and see a big, imposing centerman that can dominate at two ends of the ice. And while I understand that Dubois isn't quite Andre Kopitar, he's a 6'3", big body centerman who plays, and I think this is something that is getting completely overlooked with Pierre-Luc Dubois, the player, because everybody, for some odd reason, is only looking at his points. And they just kind of end the conversation there. This is a very hard player. He scores goals from the crease. He's willing to go behind the net. He's willing to drop the gloves if need be. He is, as was described, I want to give proper credit. I think it was Eric Stevens in The Athletic. Could be wrong, but I believe it was him. They described him as a bull in the china shop type of player. Is this not exactly what Kings fans have been clamoring for a while now? A big, hard to play against, but also skillful center who can drive play. I mean, he checks all those boxes. So,
let's just start there with his style of play.
Sure.
I agree with you. A lot of people have been clamoring for that. I have included on our draft show. I wanted a guy with skill, grit, not afraid to get in people's faces, being a pest. That Caden Lind is, you know, not an elite offensive talent. He's not a third overall pick like Pierre-Luc Dubois. Maybe it's me that I don't watch enough hockey. I always bash East Coast people for not staying up late. Maybe I don't watch hockey early enough. Maybe I'm working and I don't see Winnipeg play a lot. But I just wasn't impressed with him winning playing the Kings. Maybe that was oversightment by me. Maybe that was me not being around the game as much as you have. I just wasn't overly impressed with the guy. And I'll be honest that I have all my debates here coming in tonight against you are all numbers based. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to properly break down film, right? You look at the Niners podcast I listened to, and he goes, there's a vastly different nature of watching the game and breaking down film and how athletes look at film and what's going on. And you're a former hockey athlete, you're a current hockey coach. So you have a different eye than I do. But fans, including me, call him soft.
Sure.
Call him a whiner. Call him unmotivated, not energy, not driven on the ice. The Twitter clip of him just going around for a solid 30 seconds, not hitting the puck or hitting anybody, mm-hmm. has been scrolling around Twitter. So where am I wrong? Where am I missing? Compared to that.
So I want to talk about that because that's another part of the player that I really do want to get to. So back in Columbus, there's really no defense for how he handled himself at the end. Listen, he's not the first player to want out of Columbus. Jeff Carter wanted out of Columbus, and that worked out quite well for the Kings. And he was he pouted his half season there too, to the point where Columbus fans didn't like him when he went back. Like, so he's not the first one to want out of Columbus. He's not the first guy to have issues with John Tortorella. And I also consider he was 21 years old at the time, and he was immature. And unfortunately, and this is kind of a lesson for like just life, hey, you act like that and you float around the ice like that and you pout, that's going to stay with you until you get rid of that. So that is a fair criticism after that coming out of Columbus and how he acted. That said, I don't know that it's the same thing in Winnipeg. He had moments, and I'll find his Twitter. One of the writers for The Athletic, I can't remember his name offhand, but I want to give him proper credit, said Dubois was the best player on the Jets for the first 50 games of the season. He was a dominant first-line center. He said he, along with a lot of the other Jets, in January, just they hit a spot. They struggled for like 6 weeks or so. But he never, unless I'm wrong here, he never asked out of Winnipeg. He never demanded a trade out of Winnipeg. He was never an attitude problem with Winnipeg. He was asked about signing a long-term extension, and he said he didn't see his long-term future in Winnipeg. And I would say,
which is completely different. Asking out of Winnipeg versus not wanting to sign a control.
He didn't want to sign a long-term extension. He said he wasn't going to sign a long-term extension, which is his right to do. So
no, but nobody blamed Johnny Gaudreau for leaving Calgary.
No, nobody blamed Matthew Tkachuk for demanding a trade, by the way, either.
Yeah.
Right. He's praised. Dubois gets crapped on. But anyways, he didn't. And yes, Derek Olson, Murat, eight, I'm going to butcher that name. It was him that said that. He did an excellent job, by the way, covering all this. So, if anything, he was very complimentary of Winnipeg in his press conference afterwards. Like he just simply said, I don't want to stay in Winnipeg. And going to be honest, guys, not a lot of people want to go to Winnipeg or stay in Winnipeg. So I'm not going to kill the guy. He's got this rap from back in Columbus, and it hasn't escaped him. Now, part of that's on him because, hey, he did it. But listen, I think if you've got a motivated Pierre-Luc Dubois in Los Angeles, which it sounds like he is, this is a guy that is an impactful 200-foot player. So okay, I have no concerns about his attitude.
You look at it, there's other athletes, and I'm not saying he ever played to the pinnacle of these, but you're looking at the Antonio Browns, the Terrell Owens, those types of players. Shout out Trusinkos. I'm only coming up with football guys right now. Maybe you can come up with some hockey guys, but their attitude that they're not good locker room guys, that they're only out for themselves, that they're not motivated other than money, that stays with you your entire career. And fairly or unfairly, Pierre-Luc Dubois has been judged based off of him being a 20, 21-year-old. And to be honest with you, I've done a little bit of that myself. I look at his stats defensively, which aren't very good. His stats in the faceoff dot aren't very good. And we'll get into that. A lot of those are effort-based skill sets to learn. Putting the time in on the defensive side of the puck, putting time in the faceoff dot. Who does that sound like? That sounds like Gabriel Vilardi. And when he finally cared, he brought that up. Now, is that a sign? You're a professional athlete. You should do that on your own. And now he did say, hey, I'm excited to come to the Kings today in his press conference and learn the faceoff dot from two of the best in Deneau and Kopitar. So maybe he's realized that about his game. He's not the first player to want to go ahead.
I appreciate that you mentioned Kopitar and Deneau, because again, so you've got this kid in Columbus. He's at like this with Tortorella. And so he ends up saying, get me the hell out of here. So he goes to Columbus, a Columbus team that had, I can't remember now if it's Wheeler or Shifley. It was Wheeler, I think, was the captain, had the C stripped. There's been issues in Columbus for a little while now. Winnipeg. And I think it predated when Dubois got there. Not the strongest of leadership cores, at least from the outside looking in. You go to Los Angeles, you're walking into a group that's got an established leadership core. You've got Anze Kopitar. Phil Deneau's been there now. Drew Doughty's there. Matt Roy's there. Mikey Anderson is establishing himself as a leader. This is a veteran team that's been there and done that. So a couple of the guys have won cups. This is not the same scenario. He's not coming in to be any sort of savior. He's coming in to slot in the middle and be another guy on this team. So I think from a leadership standpoint, I'm telling you, and maybe I'm just really rosy here, and because I am biased because I like the player, but I don't buy into the attitude thing being a problem until I see it, because I didn't see it in Winnipeg. When that guy was on and he did it against the Kings, he was probably the Jets' best forward in playoffs against Vegas, especially that first game. He's a player. So I think the question that people have about his attitude are fair because he's earned it, but I think they're leaning way too much into his time in Columbus versus what I think he could be. And again, he didn't ask to go to Winnipeg. So presumably he wanted out of Columbus. He just said, listen, guys, it's fine here. I don't want to be here, though. He picked LA. He didn't have to sign here in Los Angeles. So presumably this is where he wants to be. And he's talking as if he's excited to be here. It's a totally different potential for this player, in my opinion.
Before I get to the LA thing, what do you think about what I said about the faceoff dot and defensive hockey is an effort style hockey, and learning how to play that side of the game? He's been in the league 7 years. Being a professional, isn't that part of your job as a hockey player to learn those skill sets, especially if you're going to be a number one C?
No question. But a couple things. I go back to that leadership thing, right? And again, it's a little unfair for me to say this from my couch here in Rochester, New York, about the leadership in Winnipeg. But there's just been a lot of like buzz coming out of there that it's just shaky ground, right? It's just not the case. It's very like stoic, I would almost call it, in Los Angeles, again, with Kopitar, with Doughty, with the guys I mentioned before. So I think that there's not going to be much of an issue getting him to, for lack of a better term, fall in line. I go back to Carter and Richards. If you remember when Carter and Richards got out of Philly, not exactly known as character guys, right?
With drinking, strip clubs, all that stuff. Yeah.
So media issues with the media, Mike Richards battling with the media. And what happened? They went to a veteran club, Anze Kopitar, Jarrett Stoll, Dustin Brown, right? All these guys. And they just settle in. They're just another guy. Like, they don't have to be the guy. They're just settling into another guy. So I genuinely don't have any concerns. I mean, because I trust the leadership group. And again, I trust the fact that, hey, you're inking a deal for eight years to stay here. Then you want to be here. I trust you're going to give your best. And you're right. And listen, another thing to consider there with the defensive zone and all that stuff. Winnipeg hasn't exactly been known as being a stalwart defensive club over the last handful of years, where the Kings, Todd McClellan, he prides himself these days on being a good defensive team with good defensive structure. So, you know, it could be learning curve. Remember the early days of 2022, 2023 was a crap show, right? With missed assignments and the Kings all over the place. They weren't getting saved. So maybe Dubois got a learning curve to get to the new system and all that stuff. And that could take a month or so. But beyond that, I think, that's not big of an issue for me.
Before we get moving on, then, man, this chat is buzzing. We're strong in here. Thank you guys for coming in here. Please hit the like and subscribe button.
You know what? We haven't. I'll hold this until we actually get to the actual trade piece. I know we're talking about the player himself.
Right now, So the LA thing, I'm going to ask you this. Is LA the new destination in hockey? You're getting multiple people wanting to come here. And a lot of players have said the reason why is, one, good weather. Can't be that, right? LA taxes are similar to Canadian taxes. So, you know, you're not really – there's no really much differential there. But the main thing is the media market, right? Marchessault said the same thing in LA, to where it's not a Canadian media market. If I miss a goal, if I don't get a point for five straight games, I'm not getting hounded every single interview about my play, and I can just be a hockey player. I don't have to worry about that on a night in and night out basis. Obviously, he probably had to answer a lot of questions in Columbus about being the number three overall pick and what's going on with Tortorella, and have to see all the comments that his coach is making about him. And then Winnipeg, where he was essentially brought there to lead them, right? Along with Kyle Connor and Scheifele and that. So now, like you said, he's coming in to be one of the guys. He's probably not going to be asked a lot of questions outside the first beginning of the season, where every media member is going to want to get their hands on him, including us here at Hockey Royalty. So if LA Kings PR wants to send him over, we'll be glad to have him. But he could just be one of the guys. He could show up and play hockey, and maybe it's about enjoying the game again. And is that LA that type of market where there's way more positives that outweigh the negatives of the high intense markets like Montreal, which was rumored to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, want to go? I mean, unless you legitimately just thrive in that environment and want to walk into the lion's den of Montreal or Toronto or one of those places, and Winnipeg's going to be packed with cameras and reporters left and right too. We're in Los Angeles. It's much more laid back. And frankly, it's much more friendly, if you will. Like it's kind of like ask a question and we move on. It's, you know, it's not exactly, they're not beating down the players too much here. Right. And so it's gotta be, a much easier environment in that sense. And real quick, I will say, because I know you flashed a couple on the board there. Yeah, fellas, hey, we really appreciate this. This comment section is flying right now. I would love to see all the comments. We're going to get to a lot of them. We got over 90 people in here. Only a couple likes on the tube. Give us a couple likes. That'd be fantastic. Just go hit that thumbs up button. Why not? Right? Especially if you're a fan of Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. Go hit that thumbs up button. That would be fantastic. But anyways, so yeah, I mean, it has to be a lot easier to play in Los Angeles than a place like Winnipeg, or obviously the other team that was heavily rumored in this was Montreal.
Yeah, he hasn't been the only one. I mean, Fiala kind of mentioned a little bit, different sport. Zach Greinke, right? Pitcher, longtime pitcher. He went and played for a heavy market in L.A., and was like, hey, this isn't for me, man. I'd rather go play in Kansas City or Arizona and just get on the mound and pitch every 5 days and not worry about having to answer every freaking question after every start. And some people are just like that. They just want to show up and handle their business and not go there. So let's get into the type of player I think that people think he is, which is the lazy type player. You say otherwise. You say he's got some grit. You say he's got some fight, oh, yeah, which is exactly what I like. And I've seen Russ throw up some clips of him getting in people's faces. Tkachuk has become probably one of my favorite player, if not my favorite player, not on LA's roster. And because he does that, he's skillful. He gets in your face. He protects his team. Reminds me a lot of, you know, Dustin Brown being able to throw in the hits and scoring the goals. You look at Ovechkin throwing the hits, getting the goals. I think that's the type of player with some nastiness in the top six that the team needs. Is that truly who he is, or are these just clips?
No, he plays a hard game. I mean, you look at his, I think, boy, I'm going to misquote this too. It might have actually been Blake. It might have been the LA Kings insider, Zach Dooley, that was quoting him. And I think something along the lines of he's one of only a handful of players in the last 2 years that has 100 points and 100 penalty minutes. Like, he is not afraid to throw his weight around. He's not afraid to be physical. He will drop the gloves if he, you know, he's not a fighter, but he is certainly not afraid to do it. So, again, I just think he brings a different style that this team and particularly the fan base has been begging for. So I think he's a really good fit in that sense.
I'm afraid that you might be winning me over by the end of this podcast, and I'm going to try to stay stern and as much as possible. So I just think that – I think it's – for me, it's been like this is all hypothetical on what this player could be. He's not a true number in 1C. If you look at the stats, right, like individual point production, right? So I filtered it with players over 500 minutes, so essentially starters. At 5-on-5, there were 260 players better than him in the National Hockey League. He only scored a point on 61% of the times there was a point scored while he was on the ice, or goal scored while he was on the ice. Now, he's supposed to be adding this power play dynamic. So I felt like, okay, well, hey, he's a power play guy. With over 150 minutes on the power play, he's only contributed to the goal 60% of the time, which is 98th in the NHL. You know some players that were higher than that on 5-on-5? All the players in the other trade going the other way. Barry, Iafallo, Velarde were all higher than him on that. So are we really getting the offensive juggernaut? I mean, it wasn't like he wasn't playing with weapons. Kyle Connor's a former 40-goal scorer. Mark Scheifele, offensive player. Like, are these... Is he really going to be a player that is highly able to score points? Because I think a lot of people are like, okay, well, now he's in a different situation. He's going to be a point-per-game player. Sometimes in sports, players are just who they are. Is he just a 60-point player? And did we vastly – well, I guess we won't get into the contract net. But I have a fear that he's vastly overpaid for what the production that he's put out so far. Am I wrong here to be skeptical about this? I mean, I know you really like him, but where would you counteract that, I guess?
I think it's fair to have the questions because the point production has been – listen, I mean, I go back and forth on this because I think it's a little overstated because – especially from Kings fans, because they have had a number one center for the last – how many years has Kopitar been here? This has been 12 years, 13 years. He's not a point-of-game guy. In his career, I had one season, I think, where he's a point of game guy. So I don't like leaning so much into points and just flat production. You're right. Like, listen, if you're going to pay the guy what the Kings paid him, you know, you do hope that 60 point floor is more like 65, 70 floor. And he spikes like Kopitar was a 70 point guy for a while, spiked an 81, spiked a 90 point season. Like, and you have a couple of those spikes over the years, right? Like, but I think if he can be a 65 to 75 point player, just looking at pure point production, plus what all the other stuff that he brings, his net front on the PP, his down low work on the PP, again, that physical presence that he brings, that depth down the middle that strengthens the Kings roster, play driving, all that stuff. Like, I think all of that combined, it can make it worth it. And again, he's doing it at a premier position. I buy the center position as being an important one. I buy being strong down the middle. And he certainly adds that.
So for centers that are getting paid route what he's getting paid, and this is from Morrissey at 1K Morrissey on Twitter.
Okay.
Sebastian Aho, Roope Hintz, Tim Stützle, Thomas Hertl, Robert Thomas, Jack Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Tage Thompson, and he's getting paid the same as Drysdale. Would you take him over any of those players? Because I know I wouldn't.
First of all, Drysdale,
yeah.
He's about to get that. He's at the end of that contract, so that's going to go up by, like, a lot. So
Fine. Even take him out. Would you take him over the other eight? I know I would.
Well, so I want to be clear. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying that Dubois is a top five or top. I think he's in that top 15 center range, top 20 center range in the NHL. I'm not saying he's a top 10 center per se, but again, I look at it more of a total package and total picture. I mean, in terms of the way he plays, I mean, those guys are more productive. Like they've clearly shown to be more productive players in terms of pure offensive output. There's no, I certainly won't argue that. Cause there was some player, I was looking at a similar list, you know, and those are all guys. I think he actually makes more than those guys, but like Dylan Larkin, he's right there. Bo Horvat, he's right there. Those were two that I write in that 8.5 range, I think.
Yeah. He makes more than all the guys I mentioned. Yeah.
Yes. I would take him over Horvat. I would take him over, who's Dylan Larkin. Mika Zibanejad was also in that mix, and Zibanejad's an excellent player. That's fair. That's fair. He's not as offensively productive as those guys have been. I think that's a very fair thing to point out. But I don't think the contract, because those guys aren't making like six. It's not as if those guys are making.
No, those are all within a mil and a half of.
Yeah. And I would argue if you were to look at, say, I know The Athletic does an excellent job with, you know, the player cards, and what they try to do is they look at the market value of the player. I would bet all of those guys are playing to like $10 million. So, well, maybe not all of them. I bet some of those guys are playing to like $10 million market value, where I think this past year Dubois played at an $8.5 million market value, ironically. So I guess we might as well talk about the contract before we get to the trade, since we're kind of talking about that or skirting around it. The contract, he was never going to get nine from me because there was no precedent. There was no comparable for that. But in my head, I was like, okay, if it starts with a seven, that's a great deal for LA. Eight felt the sweet spot, felt right, maybe most fair. 8.5, it's a little on the high end. Like I definitely was hoping more for eight or closer to eight than 8.5. That said, I do think he can exceed that value over the course of this contract because of his age and because of his ability and because of, again, the situation that I think he finds himself in. I don't think it's an egregious number. I think it's the max, right? I think that you're paying the premium. So it leaves little wiggle room for him to exceed that. And that's teams that win are going to have guys that exceed their contract value. So it's, you know, the 8.5 is again, it's 500 more a year than I would have preferred.
I look at it this way too. And there was a time that was, I think it was right before Pasta got his extension, and Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasta were all making $7 million on the first line. The mm-hmm. steal for Boston. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kopitar, his payment's going to be going down from 11 mil to whatever he signs. And we'll say that's seven, right? His play goes down a little bit. He gets like a 2 year seven per.
Sure.
Well, now your 1-2-3 center is making 8.5, 7, and 5.5. And that kind of seems like a bargain, especially with the cap going up by 5 million. So it might seem like the center core is getting paid vastly more than what they should be. Like you said, it's the premium for Pierre-Luc Dubois. It's probably the most a 60-point player has ever been paid. So, you know, he has to produce in order to make that contract feel valid. Yes. But in a crystal ball type world, you could see this contract or the center depth, like the total of the spine, as you called it on Twitter, be rather affordable as a chunk for a 1-2-3, being roughly at $20 million for the first three lines. In a year or two. And I think that maybe that's where it's like in the future, that might not be too bad going forward.
I agree. I think I think that's well said because, I think we all expect Kopitar to be making, you know, maybe not quite half, but $6-7 million, as you say. And yeah, you see some of these, you're going to see top centermen in the league in the not so distant future. They're all making $10 million. There's like five or six of them right now that make at least that. You're going to see more of that as we go along. So, I mean, it is what it is. So the fact that Dubois is at 8.5, that says he's not one of those elite 1Cs. Maybe he's a back end 1C, high end 2C. I think that's exactly where he fits. And he's going to have seasons where maybe production wise he's more 2C. I think he's going to have seasons where he produces as a 1C. I just think he's that. I think he's a low end 1C, high end 2C, but there's room to grow is how I look at this. Last year I was all in on Jack Eichel. He's not Jack Eichel. Yeah. I want to be clear. I'm not saying he's as good as Jack Eichel. I just want to, for reference, I guess.
I've seen a couple of people say that we gave up more for Dubois than Vegas gave up for Eichel. Yeah,
I want to get to that. It's one of the things one of the comments I saw. What did Vegas give up for Eichel? And I can't disagree with that statement anymore. So Vegas gave up Alex Tuch, Peyton Krebs, a first round pick, and a second round pick. Alex Tuch is better than anything the Kings gave up. Peyton Krebs is a significantly better prospect than Erasmus Kapari.
Yeah.
A first and a second. It's not close. That was a much bigger deal than what Dubois got.
Eichel was injured.
And Eichel was coming off a pretty significant back injury and had a $10 million cap hit to go along with it. So that deal, in my opinion, isn't even close. I guess maybe if you want, it's up to you if you want to take this to the contract now, Rando, or to the trade itself, Rando, because I actually think Winnipeg
where do you think, in order for this to be worth it, as far as from a money standpoint, where do you think he has to produce? What level would make you feel comfortable at 8.5 mil?
If his floor over the next, so 8 years, I guess, if his floor is a 65 point player, that's his floor. If that's where he's at on an 82 game pace, right? 80 game pace. If he's a 65 point player, and then where he has seasons where he gets to throughout that, right? He's going to have seasons where he goes to 75 or to 67. Or to 78 or to 80, 72. Like, I think if he's consistently there, and maybe I'm being that could be optimistic, right? But as long as if he's doing that, but he's playing that 200 foot game, he's playing big time minutes in special teams, he's playing that presence again, I think 8.5 is an okay number. Like, I don't think that, especially by all accounts, the cap is going to be going up soon. Like, I just don't think that's a prohibitive number for a guy that's going to be a solidly top six center, whether he's one or two, because I think the other question here that I'm sure we're going to end up getting to is what happens with Quinton Byfield in 2, 3, 4 years? Where is he playing? Is he a center? Is he a winger? So, you know, I agree as a paid player, you do need to produce. I don't want to downplay the production. So I think if he can settle in as a floor around that 65 point number as the floor, at least be consistent there and then spike some in the 70s and maybe 80s, I think the Kings are fine.
We got a couple here. It says, Angel says, you know, PLD would have to be a 90 point player to make this make sense. Tom Cruise coming in here, he would have to be at least somewhere between 75 and 82 point player for this money to make sense. I think I'm right around where Tom Cruise is coming in at. I think if he flirts with a point per game guy every season, I'd be fine with 8.5.
But can I ask though, are we being a homerism? Because Anje Kopitar has never been a point, one season he was a point per game player.
But Pierre-Luc Dubois is not a Selke winner.
So, okay, but all we've been talking about is points though. So that's why it's like a little.
So he's not a defensive person. So he has.
He's not a bad defensive center.
Agree to disagree there. I just think you're looking at, if you're going to be a Selke winner and you're going to play 25 minutes a night, It's different than playing 18 minutes a night and focusing solely on offense. Pierre-Luc Dubois doesn't play the penalty kill. So, like, he needs to contribute way vastly more in the offensive area to make it make sense for him.
Okay, fair enough.
Let's get into the trade itself and what we gave up. Okay. Holden coming in here saying it's definitely an overpayment, but I think PLD would do really well here. When he's on his game, he's really good, but he has stretches where his play falls off. So he thinks it's a little bit of an overpayment, but it's solely dependent on PLD there. So and then GF comes in, hey, let PLD play a year in a Kings jersey and we can revisit this trade. Obviously, all that is hindsight.
Yep.
If he plays up to his money, fantastic. Right. Yep. I couldn't be more happy with Fiala. And, you know, and so I think that's something that needs to be looked at. Let's start with the main piece. The piece that got this done was Gabriel Vilardi.
Yep.
I think there's an overwhelming sense of in the Kings community that he wanted out of LA. He was never going to sign here. And to that, I say that's poppycock. Because there was no report that came out that I saw that Vilardi openly demanded a trade. There's no report that I saw that he wanted $6.87 million or anything like that. There's no report that I saw that he wouldn't play for LA or he was never going to sign here or he was disgruntled with his role or any of those things. Now, those talks could have been built from behind closed doors, but how any fan knows that on Twitter, especially if no major outlet reported it, good luck there on that tinfoil hat theory. My thing is I think Vilardi was probably in that four to six range. Kings needed him to sign a lot less, or they realized that they can't sign PLD and give Vilardi what he wants in the same season. So Vilardi, based on that, they chose Pierre-Luc Dubois over Gabriel Vilardi. And he was the de facto trade piece because the money doesn't make sense with both of them. Where do you stand on why he was the main piece in this trade?
Well, for a couple reasons. One, you have to give to get. Two, the Kings have been pretty adamant Byfield and Clark ain't going anywhere. So if they're off the table, and I think you're spot on, there's no way they could pay, they could make a trade. First of all, I don't know how they make a trade for Dubois that doesn't include Clark, Byfield, or Vilardi. I guess maybe Kaliev would have been a centerpiece if the money could work. I don't think it would have been a centerpiece. He would have been a centerpiece personally. So, A, you got to give to get. B, he's due a contract. And, they couldn't fit them both in there. I have no clue about where the Vilardi LA thing was. I know Dennis Bernstein, I think it was, reported the two sides had not even talked yet about a contract. I'm of the opinion, I speculated, I don't recall if it was on the pod or maybe it was after the pod that we were chatting last week, Brandon, that I can see that being contentious. And I know he's an RFA, so he's only got so much leverage, or you know, if any at all, but I can see the two sides not being very close because I think that he, depending on given the season he just had, but also B, with his injury history, he may have wanted a little bit more security. So I just don't know what those conversations were like, though. But I wouldn't be surprised if the two sides were far apart.
Yeah, I think you look at security is an interesting one, and you know, with his injury history, like. I think he's came back from his back. I don't think he's been injury prone. I think he had he missed
19 games last year with an upper body injury that I don't think we were ever told what that was. That could have been a back. I'm speculating. And if I'm wrong,
Pierre-Luc Dubois only played 73 games. They played seven less games. Like it wasn't like it was.
But my point is if it was his back again, that is concerning. Now, again, I don't know that. I want to be very clear.
Which is fair because the Kings would know that and we don't.
Right. And I don't know if that was ever announced and they made clear what his injury was. I believe they called it an upper body injury, but I don't think it ever came out as to what it was. So it's, I mean, I don't think it's a crazy leap to say it was a back injury, just given his history. But I want to be clear that I don't know that. But so my thought is, or my take, I should say, on that is, I'm not going to write it off if he missed 19 games for it just last season.
Yeah.
Is all. I don't know.
And the Kings know that. And if they do know that, and then they knew that it's an injury, maybe not the same injury, but maybe a similar injury in the same region or something along that line, it gave them pause. I can understand that. And then at that point, you're like, okay, well, you're getting a better player. He might not be an elite player. He's getting paid like one right now, but he's a better player. He shores up the center depth. I want to get into that real quick before we go into the next piece. Do you think they make this trade if Quentin Byfield was farther along in his development? I say no. If he's playing like Matty Beniers, if he had a season like Matty Beniers did this year, they're not trading for Pierre-Luc Dubois. Matty Beniers had 657 points.
Yeah, maybe not. But I want to say one thing, though, and a related – I think it's a fair question. And I want to say, too, on Byfield, I don't think this means Byfield is – he's no longer a center. Like, he isn't – so – and I had said at the end of the season, like, Byfield – go take that 3C spot, right? It's there for the taking. Go get it. Go take the reins on that and become that player. The thing is, the Kings want to win now. So, and you've said it a million times in the past, Brandon, this is not a developmental league. Kings don't have time to wait for that 3C to develop from Kapari or Byfield or Vilardi, because Vilardi has not been a good center in the NHL. He's excelled as a winger. Didn't work as a centerman. The Kings, if they're talking about winning now, they don't have time to wait for this stuff, right? They need guys they're going to go right now. So I still think Byfield can be a center. I still think Byfield is seen as a center long term. So in the short term, there's no harm in him playing the wing and letting this seek out. But I want to mention one thing about the center, because all this conversation about points and second line center and top six center and this and this and this, Philippe Deneau has had two back-to-back years that were, basically career years of 51 and 54 points. Why are we okay with that production at 2C, and yet we're going to be not okay with 63 to 70 points, 63, 65 points from Pierre-Luc Dubois at 2C? So what I love about this deal is, in general, you've got Kopitar 1C, Dubois 2C, Deneau 3C,
Lazat 4C. Is Deneau the best third center in the game now?
I mean, how is he not? And then you have Lazat, who we all know is the best 4C already in the game. So that depth down the middle is like, that's fantastic.
Well, I don't think, and I don't think that I believed, nor did I want Deneau to be a 2C, right? When he got signed, I was going to say traded. When he got signed, I was like, okay, he's a bridge gap to Byfield being 2C. Right, he's the bridge gap for the future. So he played there. He was adequate. I didn't think that that's where we needed to be to win games or to win a cup. But I thought that that's what he was for this team, right? Because Gable already showed that he couldn't play the position on a consistent basis.
Right.
Which is my point. Which is my point originally for the question. Like, if Byfield shows that he can, like, you brought it up, or no, Russell brought it up on the last pod. If Byfield had the rookie season last season of Pierre-Luc Dubois' rookie season of, what, I think 48 points. I'll have it right here. I have it pulled up. Let's see. Yeah, his 19 year old season, he scored 48 points, 20 goals, 28 assists. If Quentin Byfield had that last season at 19, do you think any Kings fans would be jumping for joy?
Yep.
Right. So, and they probably would be like, okay, he's the future. Put him at 2C. We'll be good.
Yep.
So that's where I really think that the production from Quentin Byfield made this trade. Because the reason they went out and got Philippe Deneau, and Rob Blake even said it, hey, we didn't feel like we were strong enough down the middle. We didn't have any confidence in anybody to play 2C. We went out and got one. Mm-hmm. This feels exactly the same to me. There's no guarantee that Byfield has shown any glimpse of being a center in the National Hockey League.
Not yet. Period. Correct.
Period. So if Kopitar, Father Time is undefeated. If Kopitar starts to take that slide mm-hmm. and the Kings still want to compete, they need somebody to take up that slack. And this is that's my favorite part of this trade for me is because I've been saying this for 2 years now. I don't think the Kings are ready to compete down the middle once Kopitar needs to take a step back. Great. And now they have a much bigger cushion mm-hmm. because Deneau is definitely not a one seed. Right. So, and Byfield isn't, Vilardi isn't, Kupari, he's a center, isn't, Turcotte can't even get on the ice. So as you have said, when do number one seeds become available in the National Hockey League? Maybe Austin Matthews. I have a feeling that unless he wants out 100%, I mean, and then we're going to be on a bidding war with 20 other clubs for that player.
Not right? anymore. So, probably not right? anymore.
Right? So, no, if we don't sign Pierre-Luc
Dubois. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you look at it. You look at Fiala need, it was a cap casualty. Rob Blake went out and got him. Mm-hmm. Pierre-Luc Dubois said, hey, I'm not signing a Winnipeg. If you want to get something for me, get something for me. And he said, hey, I want to go to LA. So now you have a player who you think is a fringe 1-2. I think he's more of a middle 2. Regardless, like you said, now you're getting a guy whose floor is 10 points higher than Deneau. He's more offensively gifted than Deneau. Deneau doesn't have to spend time on the power play, which gives him more energy for the penalty kill, which he's better suited for. So I think this is the favorite part of the trade for me. I'm not 100% sold on the player, sure. but I will 100% admit that the depth down the center is what wins cups, and we are 100% better in the center of the ice.
Boy, would I love to know what the offers were, if there were any, for Jack Eichel, because that's what I wanted for Jack Eichel was like, listen, you've got your stopgap right there. When Kopitar's yeah. done, you don't even need Byfield to be a 1C because you got Eichel. Byfield can be a 2C and doesn't have to put any pressure on him. And he can, you know, so anyways, that's kind of how I look at this. And Byfield can take his time because in 2 years, Kopitar is going to be 38, you know, like at some point, Father Time is undefeated. So they're going to need another top. And in a couple of years, like Deneau ain't going to be around forever either. He's going to be in his 30s too. So they are going to need another center.
Very and three years from now, he's going to be 23. So he'll still be ready to
very young. So I still think the future for Byfield as a center is not like that's not buried. You know, we're going back to the trade. Vilardi, and I don't know what Winnipeg's going to decide to do with him, but he didn't play well as a center in Los Angeles. The second he was moved to the wing in Ontario, Randon, we saw it firsthand. I mean, he was a totally different Night player. And he was great in Los Angeles as a winger. Full marks. Like, I want to be clear. Like, I am a fan of Pierre-Luc Dubois. I do think he's the better player right now than Gabe Vilardi. I acknowledge, but I think anybody that's listened to this show knows how big of a fan Gabe Vilardi I am. And that I think he's a very talented player with a high ceiling. There's risk because he's been oft injured, and that included just last season. But there's talent in that player. There's no doubt about it.
I think for me also, you know, there's obviously emotional part to sports. I'm a huge Vilardi fan.
Yep.
And him gutting through that injury, you know, like that just takes real cojones. Really love the season he had. You saw it on his face, every goal.
Yep.
Bringing the leg up, fist pumping, you know, like you just felt for him. Like he feels he's back. Like he feels like this is what I was intended to be in the National Hockey League. And, you know, I felt great for him. And then now it's like that player's after we finally see a glimpse, he's gone. And yep, that's, you know, that's part of the NHL. Like players that you love get traded all the time. And I think it's just that's the little emotional part for me. I would have loved to seen Vilardi succeed in L.A. But you look at it. I forget where I saw it. He goes, if you can't draft a center, you better trade for one. It was in the Athletic article that I read, right? They didn't really draft a center in Vilardi. They didn't really draft a center in Turcotte. They really didn't draft a center in Kupari. They really didn't draft a center in Kempe. They didn't, really, you know, and Byfield is still not a 2C. So if you can't draft one, you better go out and get one, right? And so I think they're just hedging their bets. Do you think, I know you are a Stützle guy. Yeah. To me, that draft pick for Byfield makes zero sense now. Like with And hear me out. Obviously, hindsight's 2020. Maybe Rob Blake had a different view of how the rebuild will go, and then he made the moves he made and went in a different direction and adapted. Totally valid. But if he was trying to win a cup with Kopitar and Doughty, Byfield needed longer to develop. He said that. Everybody said that. Then Stützle seems like the guy. Like, could you imagine this roster with another? Well, they probably mm-hmm. wouldn't have been able to fit Pierre-Luc Dubois because Stützle's mm-hmm. making $8 million. But in theory, like, could you imagine this roster with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Stützle and all this there? Like, it would be ridiculous, the offense.
Yeah, like we've talked about, I think I mentioned on at numerous occasions, the Kings have kind of tried to thread a needle here where they are sort of rebuilding, but they didn't totally blow it up. Yet they kind of want to win. Like, now they're getting into like winning. So in order to do that, you need to really hit on young guys that are cheap. And unfortunately, what really set that back was, you know,
they haven't hit on any first round.
They haven't. They just haven't. I mean, right. I mean, Turcotte didn't hit. You look at
Byfield's not hit so far.
Bjornfoot slow start. Bjornfoot didn't hit. Kaliev has been kind of a slow go right now. So what I credit Blake for is he has pivoted like no other.
Yeah.
Vilardi's another one. He didn't hit. Vilardi was an afterthought before this, heading into this past season. Let's be honest.
We all on this entire podcast, we thought he was going to be a fourth line or fringe bench player.
So good on him. But like, for a while, he didn't hit. So they had a lot of misses. So I think when you do that and you're like, well, shoot, we got to pivot. And they did a hell of a freaking job in doing so. So I don't know the rest of the trade. I'll do Kupari. Listen, the Kings have a stable of Kuparis. I like the kid. I don't mean that in a negative way. I like the kid, but he obviously is not ready right now to be anywhere near an impactful third line player for this team. He showed some spurts last season. Again, the Kings are not in the time frame right now to wait for Kupari. No problem. His spot can be backfilled relatively easily. I don't think that if you were to play Anderson Dolan, I don't think if you were to play Grunstrom, I don't think if you were to play Fagimo, especially Fagimo, alongside on that right side next to Lazat on the fourth line, if you had a fourth line that had Fagimo and Lazat, I guarantee you Fagimo is going to be more productive than Kupari was last season. So I genuinely think that's something that is a very, very – again, I mean this. I don't mean to harp on the guy. It's just he's a replaceable asset in my opinion. Relatively easy because of the depth in the organization.
Mike, come in here before I get a comment on that. To be honest, we've sucked at drafting this last decade, and then he comes in at least first rounders. So there was an article that came out on The Athletic. It was like 2 years ago. The Kings were actually top three in the league in drafting and getting games out of their draft picks or, you know, total games played, all this kind of stuff. But all those players came in the second round or later. You are right. In the first rounders, we have drafted zero elite players in the first round. I guess Kempe now finally turned out to be an elite player and obviously Kopitar. But in the last decade, Kempe is really the only one that I can think of unless I'm missing somebody in the first round that has turned out. And it took 7 years. Like, it took a long time. And, you know, and that doesn't always happen. Like, I think Kempe is the outlier. Like, there's very few players. Like, usually if you're not good by 22 – you're not going to become elite out of nowhere. Like, the Tage Thompsons and the Kempes aren't usual archetypes for people, and they can happen. And sometimes it just takes more. I mean, Kempe said it himself. He's like, I just had to figure out that I just needed to shoot the freaking puck. Like, I need to stop waiting for other people to come out and do that and shoot the puck. So I think you're looking at it from a standpoint of, yeah, like, we haven't got the Cale Makar. We didn't draft the Nathan MacKinnon. Those types of players with our top picks. Maybe Clark will be one, and Clark is obviously my choice there. Clark is a massive if he works out, because he has a pinnacle to be a Norris Trophy winner, in my opinion. Like, now that the Norris Trophy is pretty much an offensive award for the defenseman, he has a chance to be one of the best offensive defensemen in the league, period. And I don't think that's even a stretch to say. I'm looking at it from this way. You're right. I like Kempe, or I like Kupari. I liked his game. He just wasn't consistent enough for me. You saw moments of what you drafted him to be. Hey, he'll go down the line, power to the move, and then he'll pass it to somebody. There's so many times where he'd make the move and then defer. And like, you're never really going to move up the depth chart if you're not. Now, he did add some stuff to his game, but that's bottom six stuff. You can find that player anywhere. Like you said, we have a stable. We have Pinelli, 50 goals in the OHL. We have Kromiak. We have all yada, yada, yada. I really like Fagimo. I think that he might have a chance to overtake Kalia.
It's an opportunity for Fagimo. Yeah, it's an opportunity for Fagimo at this moment. Yeah.
And we need to, and let's not get this twisted here. I was a fan. I wanted them to play their young stars, and that's the rebuild. Maybe more of the Anaheim direction and see what you got and grow this thing from the studs. Didn't happen. They wanted to go and fight, and they're trying to thread the needle, as you say. But if they're using assets to get these players that they got during the rebuild by trading away other said players, isn't that the rebuild working? Like, you're using the assets that you have acquired to spend on different assets.
Brandon, we have been talking since the inception of this show and our Making a Rain show. The Kings have too many guys.
Yeah.
They got all these prospects. They got all these young players. They got no spots. Fagimo's still in the AHL. Turcotte, obviously, was hurt, still in the AHL. Like, Kaliev spent time in the AHL. Weisbeifel, they had all these roster spots, all these. They had a lot of quantity. And they were waiting to see which of these guys are going to pop, right? And they traded from that quantity to go get an impactful top six center. That is the point, Brandon. Yes, you are spot on. This is exactly what we've been talking about for 2 years now. That, listen, you've got all these guys. You got to make a move here to go make that, turn some of these assets into an impactful player. And that is exactly what they did. So they did it with Fiala. They traded from a spot of depth in Brock Faber to go get Fiala. And they, again, here, Kupari, again, nice player. They have plenty of them. Velarde, the ceiling's high on Velarde, and I don't want to downplay. I don't want to talk like I didn't like him because I love Velarde. Dubois is a better player at a premier position. And I think that there's enough risk there with Velarde to where this makes sense. We have not talked about Iafallo yet.
Well, before let's do the Velarde thing. I want to add this. I've said this before. The other side of the trade does not matter. The Kings have Pierre-Luc Dubois now. So ultimately, what Velarde becomes, what Kupari becomes, who the second-round pick is, has no consequence, right? You don't know if the Kings were going to draft the same guy in that draft. Mm-hmm. You don't even know if they were going to keep that pick and use it for something else. Mm-hmm. So let's move that away. If Velarde becomes a point-per-game player on the wing, and so does Pierre-Luc Dubois, then who gives an F, right? Like, ultimately, you got what you wanted. You got a center who's a point-per-game player, who's driving play, and he's a first-line center. Why does it matter?
He's done it multiple years where Velarde just – he's had 1 year, Velarde.
No, but I'm saying in the future. I'm holding out the crystal ball. 2 years down the line, we'll say 3 years down the line, both Velarde and Pierre-Luc Dubois are point-per-game players. Then who cares? Who cares? You got what you wanted. You're getting a guy that's a point-per-game player guy who's driving play. He's the first-line center. Kings are winning. Nobody's going to care. Right? Are you keeping track of Brock Faber's stats? I'm not. And I was the biggest Brock Faber fan. No, why? Because Fiala is kicking some ass. And he worked out. I don't even know who the first round pick is that they took for
me neither.
Right? So it doesn't mean any consequence. Like, the people aren't going to care if Pierre Dubois pans out. They are afraid because it's not an obvious pan out situation for most people. You're probably the most bullish person. I mean, you and Russ are both bullish, but I'm skeptical. I had a chat with my brothers. Like, all I've seen all today is my brother Logan with throw emojis because he's like so nervous about trading all these assets away. Because if you look at it, like, what Iafallo and Velarde brought last season, and we'll bring in Iafallo now, compared to what PLD brought in last season, Iafallo and Velarde were better as a combo, right? So, but is that relatively fair to say. I think it is, but you can't. Tell me why I can't look at it that way.
I don't know if you look at it in a vacuum like that, because remember, it's not just a, you look at it from Velarde and Iafallo and what they did together. Then you got to look at it from Dubois and who plays with him, right? To see what do those two do together? Because now you do have to find like, what does that lineup look like? And who, Iafallo was always somebody that was rumored to go because of his money and his role he plays. They've got a few Iafallos, you could sort of say. I know they all do it in different ways, but like Arvidsson's that middle six winger role. Trevor Moore's that middle six winger role.
I will contradict you there. I don't think there's anybody on our roster that can do what Iafallo does. He can play on all top lines, and he's the best defensive forward we got maybe outside of Kopitar.
He's a very good defensive winger. I acknowledge that. Which, they're going to miss that. But I guess my argument to that is strengthening the middle is going to strengthen the rest of the line. Like, I think you've got three guys now down in the middle, four, including Lozat, that can carry a line. So I think that is going to help some things. And again, they've got some depth to be able to make that work. Like, I think there's a spot now, the way I look at it, on the second line. There's a spot for, maybe it's Kaliev, maybe it's Fagimo, maybe they decide to split up the Dano line and it's Arvidsson or Trevor Moore. And then you look at that, you've basically moved your entire third line down to your second line down to the third line. It's like, okay, that's pretty good. Dano, Moore, and Arvidsson right now penciled in is kind of your third line. Like, I don't know, Iafallo was a third line guy for most of the season last year. So when I peel it back, he had the ability to spot in, right, and play in the top six, top line, whatever. But he's not a consistent top line or top six player. So it's like, Iafallo he can kind of jump around the lineup a little bit, and they think Trevor Moore can do much the same and jump around the lineup a little bit, maybe does it in a different way. But I think it's just, I don't think it's a player that you can't replace. I mean, Iafallo, again, I know he's a kind of that glue guy and a valuable guy, but I don't see how he isn't somebody that can be replaced. What I will say is, the thing is, the Kings still need some salary to move out. So does Arvidsson still go? Because I know we talked last show or two shows ago, Brandon, about is it AI or is it Arvidsson? Well, maybe it's both because they still have some more to do. So this is the other thing I want to remind everybody, it is June. Okay, so the offseason isn't done yet. There's plenty more to happen. The Kings aren't going to go into the season with one goalie. I trust that they're going to get that figured out. So it's like there's more to happen here, I'm sure, because there has to be, because they probably need a little bit more money. Now, where does that come from? Does it come from a Carl Grundstrom? Does that open up enough money if he goes out and that buys them a little bit?
If they lose Victor Arvidsson, I firmly believe this team is worse than last year.
I want to see what it looks like.
They bring in a goalie, I mean, the amount of scoring you're losing with Velarde and Arvidsson does not get replaced by PLD. The defense is worse. I think we're vastly worse as a team at that point.
I don't think the defense is worse. I mean, I think
Velarde was a top defensive player. He was like top five in the league.
I thought you meant like the defense, like the decor.
No, but as a forward group, we're vastly worse on the defensive side of the puck. And like, I just don't think this team's even close to the same team, even with PLD in there.
Well, I want to wait and see. That's why, like, right now, I think today the Kings are a better team. Now, to your point, if they end up moving out Arvidsson, there's more to come. Like, what does that mean? Who's coming in? So I want to wait to see what the rest is going to fill out with. Like, this is, again, we talk about opportunity. Arthur Kaliev, another chance. Samuel Vigimo, another chance. So I would hope that they can find a way to fill out the roster without moving Arvidsson. Maybe it's Grundstrom. I know he's not that expensive, but maybe it's just enough to do what he's got to do. Because you're going to bring in guys like Clark, Spence, Bjornfoot, are all, what, like league minimum type players. That's what you need, by the way, at the bottom of your roster. You need those guys. Anderson Dolan's going to be cheap. So you, which is, those are the types of guys that you need to fill out the bottom of your roster. Kaliev is still cheap. Fagimo's cheap. So there's ways to do it. And I know last year when Arvidsson went down to start the season, we were all waiting for, well, Fagimo can just do what Arvidsson does. Well, now we're going to find out. You know,
he did play well. I thought he played extremely well.
Fagimo did play.
And we were puzzled, like, why he scored a goal and then he got pulled, which made no sense.
When you look at his points per 60 and all that stuff, I mean, what did he play? Two games? He only played one game, couple games, but he was there for you.
Yeah,
he was productive in those. So I want to, like, pump the – I got to – in my wrap-up of, like, the trade itself and the pieces that they dealt, to me, it was a quantity versus quality trade. Do I think that they paid more than they – had to? Well, obviously not. I mean, there was a reason why they paid the price they paid. But I do think it was more than we expected. It was more than I expected. I was thinking Velarde, a cap dump, and maybe a prospect. I didn't know if it would be another roster play. But then again, what's the difference? What if the difference, if it was Fagimo or Kupari? What's the difference?
Yeah.
Like, again, I'm not losing sleep over that. The second round pick seemed like a bit of a sweetener. Like, that seemed like a little heavy, but I don't know. I think when you peel it back, I think they can they can replace Kupari, and I think PLD is better than Velarde. And if you can't replace an Alex Iafallo, then your team ain't that good anyway. And that's no disrespect. He's a fine player, but, like, you can find your way around that. But I just want to see what the rest of the offseason brings, because it's still only June.
It is. It is. I agree and disagree with you in some aspects. I disagree with you that I think the combination of Iafallo and Velarde are better for the team than PLD as in a vacuum. Okay. I can see what you're saying, though, where it's easier to bring in wingers and find production out of the wing than it is to have a number two center. So, from that standpoint, you could still get the unknown production from Fagimo. You can still get the unknown production of from other wingers coming in. Can Kaliev take that jump? Angel, you're just harping on this, man. He's a New York Yankees fan, and let him have his fandom. Jesus, criminy. You need to get, like, a powder blue Yankees hat because you'll go half and half there.
Yeah, I don't hate the Dodgers. I got nothing against the Dodgers, but I just don't have a Dodgers hat. Angel, you send me one. I'll wear one.
There you go. You heard it here. I think that you're looking at those types of moves, and obviously the biggest move that needs to come in this offseason is the second goalie, right? And, the biggest adage here – or not the adage, but the biggest saying here, I think you see a lot of times when the trades come in, is get the best player and the rest of the stuff will figure it out, right? And the best player in this trade is Pierre-Luc Dubois. So ultimately, where I kind of stand on it, through all the speculation, I was F no. And then when the cost kept going up, I was even more F no. And then it's like my emotions were like, I love Gable or Velarde. And, like, really, after thinking about it a long time, where it makes sense to me is, like I said before, is the center depth. You actually have a legit, in your opinion, I think he's still middle ground, second C, whatever. But he still is an actual second line center with upside, where we don't actually have a second line center. Deneau can play second line, but realistically on a cup winning team, he's not a second line center. So, for me, that's the only standpoint that I really like this trade, is I think it really helps bridge the what if Kopitar falls off, the what ifs of these things. Because if you have Deneau and Kopitar falls off to a 50, 60-point guy, this team ain't making the playoffs. So Velarde ain't going to help that either. So I think that's where this trade is like, okay, I understand. We overpaid in both prospects and in money, in my opinion.
Did they overpay in prospects?
I do think so. Yeah. I don't think, like, he was on his way out and he said he wanted to go to LA. Like, now Winnipeg could say, hey, I really don't care where you want to go. I'm going to trade you to Montreal. They offered us a better package, right? But then Pierre-Luc Dubois still has the authority to be like, hey, well, then I'm not signing in Montreal.
Right.
Right. So there was no leverage for Winnipeg. Like there was no need for the second sweetener. There was no need for that. Like I would have been like, they could have got this deal done, in my opinion. Maybe they moved out more cap because of Kupari, right? He's a little bit more expensive than maybe a rookie, right? But like they could have got it done with Vilardi and Iafallo. And then for me, I've been like, okay, that makes sense. Like we're moving, you have some give to get, you're moving money out. Like the sweetener just seemed like an overpay. Like it really made no sense. And when that second came from Dursey, you're looking at Dursey was our second best offensive defenseman last year. Like would that trade still make for you if his name is on that instead of the second round pick? Does that trade still make sense for you at that point?
It definitely, yeah. I mean, for sure, it seems like a lot. I think though, when you're looking at it, I think there always had to be three pieces. I don't think it was just going to be Vilardi and Iafallo. That third piece was either going to be that second round pick or maybe a prospect. I didn't think it would be both. I'm with you there. Like I did not think it was going to need both. But again, when I look at it, it's like it's replaceable. I don't know. I'm not. It doesn't. Because I know you said they're all starting players, quote unquote. They were last year, but Dursey was getting pushed out, and Kupari was a fourth line player. Would be a fourth line player. So like, even if it was Dursey, right? You take the second, you make it Dursey. It's like okay, you're still so you're trading your seventh defenseman and a fourth line player to go along with your cap in Iafallo, and then the main piece in Vilardi, like. And that's the rosy way of looking at this, fully acknowledged. Yeah. But, like, is that not what it is?
I mean, you're getting down to brass tacks there. I understand where you're coming from. I'm just saying, like, you're looking at it. I'm looking at it from the point of, yeah, they gave from a point of strength. But
I guess maybe
it does make sense for the Kings, right? Because you're giving from a point of strength. Like, if it was any other team, then – are they really giving up Dursey, right? Like, not every team has Jordan Spence and Brent Clark waiting in the wings, right? So I can get what you're saying. And like I said, I fully admitted in the beginning of this podcast that you talking would probably change my mind on this thing a little bit, and I'm warming up. But I said this to my brothers earlier today. If Pierre-Luc Dubois proves me wrong, and I said it all day yesterday on Twitter when fans attacking me, if he proves me wrong, I'm not going to care what we gave up.
Shit, I've been eating crow on Gavrikov for about 3 months now. So it happens.
You know, and I'm not going to care. I'm not going to care. I might even buy a 8-80 jersey. Who knows? But for me, it's really like my gut when it first came out wasn't hell yeah. It was I'm nervous.
And that's fair.
And that's where I'm like, okay, like. Where does this make sense to me? I have to find, because pretty much I was willing to give up almost anything for Chychrun besides Byfield and Clark. So like this exact trade for Chychrun, I probably thought it was a little bit too much, but I was all in because I was a need. We needed a lefty like that. Let's go. It's Chychrun. Let's do this. Right. But so I get it to the fact that like, it just makes me feel a little bit icky for a bad adjective, but so, I need to find where the bright side is, and I have found that so far which is the center depth and the bridge in the upcoming year, so the Kings aren't garbage. Like if Kopitar falls off, and they have a legit second center, but there's a lot of unknowns here that we can't answer at this time of the trade. Will Pierre-Luc Dubois take that next level? Is there a prospect for the love of God? Is there a prospect to take a step and insert himself into a roster right away? Like I need somebody to step up. And I truly think that can be Fagimo, but I mean, you even have a Turcotte has a chance to make the roster if he can even stay healthy, right? Like is he that player that can fill in for an Iafallo? He's pretty good defensively. He's that energy type player. He can play and kind of plug in. Like, is he that type of guy that is is going to be able to kind of fill that? Possibly, right? He could possibly do that type of player. I don't know. I think you're looking at a player who I didn't believe was a home run, right? Like if this was, say this was Thomas Hurdle, obviously they gave up way more for Thomas Hurdle. Not a doubt in my mind. Hey, we're getting a great player, right? Like this is just, there's a lot of unknowns with the player. There's a lot of, I felt like we gave too much up because there is a lot of unknowns. But if he proves me wrong, I'm not going to care.
There's a couple of unknowns too that aren't, we don't know what other offers there were. We genuinely don't know. And we don't know even know if it was just Montreal. I think Colorado's reporter would kick the tires before they went to Johansson. We don't know if there's another team that was involved. And I think Winnipeg, the other thing to think about too, is a lot of times you deal a player like this, of this caliber, a top six centerman, sometimes it's a first round pick that's going. They weren't getting a first round pick out of this deal. So maybe part of them for Winnipeg to be okay with doing this, like, listen, we're not getting a first, then we want a second and a young player. So maybe that's where Kupari and the second came in. And I think Winnipeg wants to be competitive. Like, I know there's a lot of talk about a lot of players in Winnipeg. Dubois gone. Hellebuyck could be gone. Wheeler, Shifley. But I don't think, as crazy as this sounds, like they don't want to rebuild.
They want to retool.
Yeah, so that's why they get Vilardi, they get Iafallo, they get NHL caliber players. I think that was the other part of it too. So there's always a lot of stuff that we just have no idea about.
There was an article that I read in Montreal. They said that the offers that Montreal were giving were for prospects that weren't NHL ready, and Winnipeg was asking for guys that could play.
Exactly.
Now whether that's true or not, that's their insider. Well, that's what I heard out of Montreal.
I think that's pretty true because Montreal, they're in a build mode right now. They don't have a whole lot to give. I don't think Winnipeg's all that interested in Mike Hoffman or Josh Anderson. So in terms of NHL players, and really Montreal is not in a position where they should be making a trade to deal future assets the way they're building. So I didn't really think that made a whole lot of sense for a trade. Free agent, sure, go sign them. But I didn't think for a trade it makes sense for Montreal. But yeah, I mean, Turcotte's a good shot. I mean, it opens up again. They had us so many guys. We've been talking about it for so many years. They finally do the deal that we've expected of 2, 3, 4 guys for one. Like, that's kind of, I think your question of, but is that one worth it? I think it's, I get it. It's a reasonable question. I think when you see the quantity of players and assets that were in this deal, it's kind of a sticker shock. I just think when you peel it back, I don't think it's a backbreaker by any means. I think it's, again, I think the Kings, maybe I'm in the minority here. I think the Kings are a better team right now. Now, again, offseason still is not over. We'll see what else gets done because there's a lot to do. Kings have 16 roster players right now. They need, although I believe Blake alluded to that there may be times this season where they're short and they don't play with a full 23 roster.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, we'll see how things kind of shake out here, but they have a lot of prospects that are right there kind of knocking on the NHL door. And I think that allows them to make a move like this.
Yeah. I mean, they need to. They need to have players that are, that are NHL ready. Shane Pass coming in. PLD's train is warming up. Let's go, Randa. Hey, I can only be conductor of one train. I'll let Joe be the conductor of the PLD train. forever the conductor of the Clark train here. So, Holden coming in. PLD is a very good big body net front presence with something we needed. Mike coming in here saying, does he play a north-south game? Where do you kind of rate his game there? Obviously, you said he's a little bit of a shit disturber. He has scoring touch. He plays in the crease.
Yeah.
But can he get up and go? Because most likely he's going to play with Fiala. How do you see them two pairing in? Loved it last podcast, but why do you love it?
I've been thinking about that. Like, what is that mix of player? Who's he play with? And off the top, my first thought is Fiala, because I think that. And then the other side of this is, who's that right winger? Who's that other winger? I almost think it could be a guy like a Trevor Moore or Victor Arvidsson to kind of be that puck hound and go get it. So I think that they will be a good fit together because of the creativity that Fiala has, and he can kind of create so much on his own, and that Dubois can do more of that dishing the puck to Fiala. He can do more of the bringing bodies to him because he's not afraid to go to that net front and be that kind of in the top of the crease area to draw attention to him. Like I can see it on a zone entry where the three on two, Dubois is the one that's going right to the net, drawing those defensive to him, open up in that high slot for Kevin Fiala or whoever that other winger is, whether it's Kaliev or Moore or Arvidsson or Fagimo, whoever it is. So I think he's a guy that is skilled enough to where he's played the half wall on the power play before. He has plenty of skill in his game, but he is not afraid to roll up his sleeves and go to the top of the crease. He asked the question, is he fast? Like when I hear Pierre-Luc Dubois, I don't think, whoa, speedster. But he can move. He can get up and down the ice.
Can he skate with Fiala?
Yeah, I don't think that'll be a problem.
A lot of people were putting, I've seen on mocks on Twitter, Kaliev up on the second line. I just don't think Kaliev fits as a third pair on that. He doesn't skate with them.
He may not. And my first thought was Kaliev, but I'm not like married to it. I'm actually open to like a Trevor Moore being kind of a buzz, somebody that can buzz a little bit, somebody that can skate, puck hound type of guy that can win battles in the corners, get in on a forecheck. I think maybe somebody like that could be better. I get the Kaliev because he's that shooter, right? And maybe you have that Dubois that's kind of that bull in a china shop type of player. Then you've got the skill creative Fiala, and then you're just your sniper in Kaliev. So maybe it works. I wouldn't be surprised though if it didn't quite work.
I like the Moore idea because then you could have a similar player in Alex Turcotte if. Obviously, he's going to be healthy to start camp, we assume. Right. Play on the third line, and he kind of fills that Trevor Moore style with probably a little bit more upside. He plays on that third line minute, so you're not subjecting him to 20 minutes right off the bat. I mean, T-Mac's not that type of coach, so I don't envision that, and he trusts Moore on the second line. So then you're getting Turcotte on the third line, which is probably fair for him if he comes into camp to give him that opportunity. I think another – and it was unlimited. I mean, but he showed trust in Fagimo to play on the top line. He showed trust in Fagimo to play up, and he is that sniper. And Fagimo can skate better than Kaliev. I think that would be an interesting line there as well.
Yeah, and Dubois is going to be an impactful guy in the power play. I know, Velarde made his, he made his hay, and we talked, we were singing.
Yeah, how does he fit down there where – you see him as a one-for-one replacement for Velarde down below the net?
He can play down low just fine, yes. I think he can do an excellent job down low. There's been times where he's been in the bumper, though I don't know that it was like – I think it's just because of the rotation. Maybe he got flushed there. He's been in the left circle before. This is a talented player. He's versatile. He can play in a lot of different spots, but he is definitely one that you can have and work it down low for sure.
We got one here, Al Smith coming in, watching some Jets media and podcasters today. They were saying PLD was arguably their best player for the first half of the season.
The Jets were, if you recall, a really good team in the start of the season. Then they just, for whatever reason, come like January or something, I don't know what it was, they hit a wall. But, and again, I've continued to forget, and I'm butchering his name, The Athletic, the Winnipeg writer, I apologize. But he was a surefire 1C that first half of the season. Like, he was incredible. Again, I just think that's there. I think that's in him. Is it consistent? All that stuff. Those questions are fair and yet to be answered. But I do think that there's a legitimate player in there.
Side note here, Nick Froman coming here, is Kaliev forever the fourth liner? I think people look – I've said this multiple times. People look at his dynamic as his shot and automatically assume he has offense. He should be on the first or second line, but he doesn't skate well with a lot of the tempo that the Kings want to play with, right? He doesn't skate with the Kempes. He doesn't skate with the Fialas. Like, where does he fit there? And I can see him legitimately being a third line player and a power, and then have him on the power play one, because that's his best asset. But where is that player that he's replacing? You can't replace Kempe on the one-timer because that's what he's getting paid now to do. So he's being blocked on the power play, I don't think he's as good enough to play in the top six, 5-on-5. And so, like, where is that development there? I just think he's in a weird enigma for his career, like a crossroads, if you will, right now.
You know, I wonder if there could be a fit, though, because you're right with a guy like, say, Kempe, who is very, give me the puck, I'm going to go north-south, and I'm going to snipe one on the rush off the circle. Fiala does a little bit more of that sauntering and kind of slaloming through the neutral zone. So it's not as much of a burner, if you will. So maybe with the way Fiala does it, that there could be a way for Kaliev, if he's smart, to find himself in those quiet areas. And I do think he's smart to be, just get yourself into a space where Fiala can get you the puck. Talking about the power play with Kaliev, I'm telling you, Kaliev can play the bumper. He does. I know everybody talks about, well, you just got to do his one-timer. And he played the right circle and he scored goals on the one-timer. I get it. But if they need to shift something around or they want to shift something around, he is capable of playing the bumper. He's smart enough to do it. And he doesn't need a lot of time for his release. His release is excellent. He can absolutely play the bumper and be effective there if need be.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with this on this a little bit, but last year Kaliev was on the wall in the power play and he could not do anything with the puck. He could not move, lost the puck 80% of the time. I think he had a stretch of like he had, I think he's what, third on the team in power play goals or fourth?
For a while he led.
And he led the team, yeah. So you looked at the identity for both power plays. We talked about it in the midseason that were completely different. And if the identity of the power play for the second unit is to feed him the puck, he could definitely do that. But he's not as mobilely gifted as Kempe. So like if things do break down, he can't recover as well, which makes me think that you're onto something with him as a bumper, because seems like sometimes there's less movement and he's good at finding the quiet area or that little where the open pass is. So I think that might be something to think, but
he's smart.
I think for him to be effective next season, he's going to be, I think the sweet spot is a bottom six player, second power play, and he could be an effective player for this team. Like he doesn't need to play top six to be effective. Like I think he can be effective in that role.
Agreed. So,
I think I'm warming up to this, man. And, like I said, hey, Gavrikov trade, I just had to be proven wrong. Was proven wrong. So it's okay to be skeptical. It's not okay to, and not every trade works out. But I think that you're convincing me here. And maybe the prejudice of him being, a lot of the things that I was worried about, the defensibility, you don't have that much worried about it. I mean, the numbers aren't there. So maybe with the structure of LA, that'll be better. And then the face-off thing, I just think that if he's going to be a number one center and you can't take a face-off, then when the game's on the line and you need to win a puck to get the offensive possession, you can't depend on him for that. And somebody brought it to me on Twitter. It's like, so you, with the game on the line, you're not going to have Jack Hughes on the ice? I ain't going to have him taking the face-off. I'm not going to have him taking the face-off at 30% when the game's on the line. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're paying him 8 years. You're eventually paying him to take over. I don't have that faith like I have in Deneau or Kopitar to win a faceoff that I do in Pierre-Claude Dubois. And like, that's where it's like the money that you're paying him to be an elite player, I don't think he's that. I think this is a lot of hypothetical and you're convinced, like, I think it's good for the team, but I think the hypothetical for him to be a 1C is yet to be determined, and that's where my pause is right now.
Yeah, that's fine. I honestly, like, I just don't really put much into face-off percentage. I agree. Like, obviously, you prefer your top centers to be really good at them.
Edmonton flat out put a guy out there that was 60%+ and then took him off the ice to get pucks. Like, that's not what I want to do. Like, I want to be able to just win this thing. Like, Even Carter was good on faceoffs. What, he was like 54-55%. Like
the good news is
Lazat is 5'7", a buck 40, and he's over 50%. So like, where is the disconnect for me? There is what I'm saying. Like, the guy's big, he's strong. Yeah, yep. maybe he just like Velarde did. Maybe he never put much stock into it, and now he's realizing he needs to. Which, you know, he's still young and can learn. Like, realistically, if he was 52% or 53%, like, you're talking about a small percentage of change. I guess that's pretty big from 48, which it was his best season was last year. Mm-hmm. He's average of 45 guy. Like, even if he was, maybe if he was 51%, I wouldn't be as much like against it. I guess maybe the four is just giving me a pause. I don't know. But I just think like when the game's on the line, you want your number one center to take the face off, and I don't feel confident with a guy.
Well, see, I don't look at it that way. To be honest with you, when the game's on the line and I got a D zone face off, I want the guy that's going to win the face off. I don't give a shit what line he's on. I just want him to win the draw. Like, Jack Eichel's a 45% face off guy. So, you know, maybe
he's a bum.
Maybe he's just not taking the draw. Like, you know, that's okay. Like, you know, Tage Thompson, 43% face-off guy. Elias Pettersson, 44% face-off guy last year. So I don't really care, because the thing is this. Like, right now, okay, so it's Dano or Kopitar that takes the draw. Okay. Like, that's not a big deal to me. I want him to get better. I hope he improves face-offs. I you know, obviously that's – yes, on board, but not. I'll be honest. I didn't give that 1 second of thought when that trade happened, or even when there was rumors like, "What's his face-off percentage?" I genuinely don't really care for a couple of reasons. One, like I just said, like he's got two really, really good face-off takers in Kopitar and Dano, so it's, you know, it's not totally necessary right now.
I hate you and you're logical. I want to win. I want to win, damn it. Man. Well, yeah, I guess I'm still a wait and see. I mean, like I said,
yeah.
If I still think there's an opportunity where maybe he's the player that he is and he's not a point per game guy, or he doesn't get better and he's 60 points and this is an overpay. There's that percentage, but I like to be proven wrong. I'd like to be proven wrong. And if ultimately he earns it, I'll be glad to eat crow. I have no problem saying when I'm wrong. I'm, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's part of it. It's part of the game. I'm not, that's why I don't get paid the big bucks. And even GMs are wrong, right?
I want to put a bow on it just for reference, just for like, what was, again, we reference these guys a lot. The Athletic, Dom Lecision does a really good job. He and Shayna Goldman, I think, are the ones that really put these player cards together. So Pierre-Luc Dubois' season last year, okay, which you've referenced his points, 63 points in 73 games, he actually grades out as a positive on the defensive side. Not like elite, but certainly not bad. He is a net positive on the defensive side. So They try to look at market value of the trade, or not of the trade, excuse me, of the player for that particular year. Pierre-Luc Dubois' market value last season was $8.9 million. That doesn't mean he's going to play at $8.9 million next year, but just for reference, the way he played last year with his production, they're obviously factoring in some analytics, right? Like expected goals and his usage and things like that. So for whatever that's worth, for those of you that are interested in that or believe in it or buy into it, his season last year would include his production and everything else that kind of comes along with it under the hood, is a pretty good player.
Yeah, when you also take those cards, Iafallo and Velarde are
very true. Yeah. No question. No, I'm just, but like you said, hey, the trade's done. It doesn't matter what they do. Yeah. But you're right. Very true. Very true.
So it's interesting. And you know what? It's it could go down. Let's say everything goes right. It could go down as some of the best 2 or 3 years of GM work of any GM in Kings history. Getting Fiala on the way out, capitalizing on Victor Arvidsson, getting Deneau out here, and then putting the bow on it and having a true number one C be able to take over for Kopitar, and Byfield in 2 or 3 years is ready to be that 2C. Like, there's a lot of ifs, but if they all start, the dominoes start falling together, this team could be very good, and there won't be a lull after the Kopitar years going forward. So it's very interesting. You know what I feel like this is, Joe? I got broken up with my girlfriend, right? My girlfriend, Gabriel Velarde, left me for another team, and I needed to talk to you, and I need you to console me and tell me that everything is going to be okay. And I think that you did that. I think I'm kind of warming up to a lot of this idea here. Because my main man, Joe, talked me through it, you know, and
by no means, because I totally understand, I get it. When you look at the cost, the contract and the price paid, the amount of players, blah, 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 all that stuff. That it's a lot, but I'm not looking to convince anybody one way or the other. Like, and I might end up being wrong. Maybe the guy flops. I don't know. I'm just looking at it like, this is how I look at this player. This is how I look at the assets that were made in the trade. And this is how I look at the contract, because I think they're three different things, but they all kind of tie in together. And again, I as I sit here today, with the offseason still plenty to go, I think the Kings are in better shape and better positioned today than they were yesterday. But again, offseason still young.
And he potentially solves one of the biggest mysteries is who plays with Kevin Fiala, because we really realistically haven't got that. So, well, man, you guys have been electric in the chat, going nonstop. I could barely keep up with you guys. So thank you guys for doing that. We've hit $140. Joe, you and I were worried about maybe clearing 40 minutes today, and we had no problem doing that. It's typical making it rain days when we were doing over an hour on an AHL team. So I really, you know, the conversation just comes flowing, and I really appreciate that. I appreciate everybody in the chat warming up to it, guys. Warming up. Maybe I'll be a PLD fan sooner rather than later. Wait and see. Just got to prove me right, you know. Just got to put some points on the board, make me feel okay, and I'll warm up to you. So thank you guys for coming to the chat. As always, you can find our work at hockeyroyalty.com. Go get your merch. Go get your latest news there. Find us on Twitter at hockey_royalty, at randallcommando24, at NHLRussell, at JWPaterino. All your rain coverage with Kopitar, 4HOF, DraftKings code THPN. They are our sponsor, and I almost forgot to come on and let you know that this podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. DraftKings, use their Sportsbook app now with code THPN. Just bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN with DraftKings Sportsbook. Go make some money out there on will Pierre Dubois score over his over-under on points? Probably set at, 65? Maybe bet the over on that if you're feeling the way Joe is feeling. And go there. And Joe, you know, always a pleasure, my man, talking some hockey with you. Maybe next season we'll get to actually watch a game together and see PLD in action. That would be some fun stuff. Thank you, fans. Appreciate you guys. And as always on this podcast, go Kings go.